7-6.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, Voice of America listeners. I'm Muck Bill Yarbrough in for Sunny Young. Let's get into the Friday, September 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Starting off this exciting episode, we start with Samson O'Malley and his wrap-up of African sports highlights. Sporty greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you too, Mark Bill. We begin the wrap of Africa Sport Highlights with reactions trailing the award of the 2027 Africa Cup of Nations to a joint bid of Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. This will be the first time the Africa Cup of Nations will be hosted in East Africa since its inception in 1957. The tournament only came closer to East Africa when it was hosted by Ethiopia in 1976. Peter Ogwang, Ugandan State Minister for Sport, says the bid by the three countries is a sign of unity and shows the great potential in the united front as a region.
We have to begin preparing a strong team. We should be able to ready to compete at that elite level. Secondly, there are a few things which you must do, specifically
the structure. Federation of Uganda Football Association President Moses Magogo expressed delight that Uganda will be part of a rare opportunity to host the Nations Cup.
We will have 9 home matches, but we also believe that by nature of our countries, the movement between these countries, which is so free, immigration free, it will be easy by bus, by air, by railway, by water.
But on the streets of Uganda, the reactions were mixed.
I don't see we have the arrangement and the readiness to host this African Cup of Nations, because since independence, the only one international stadium that we have now, it is only Namboole.
Importance of the AFCON in Uganda, one, our players will get market and we shall end up maybe selling out our real names outside, and then we shall get more tourists coming into Uganda.
The African Cup of Nations is going to come in 3 or 4 years from now. But in these 3-4 years, the way Uganda do their things is so slowly. So they cannot manage in that year to build maybe like 5 or 10 stadiums.
In neighboring Kenya, President William Ruto assured the Confederation of African Football that Kenya will do all it can to ensure that they host a tournament that will be the pride of Africa.
Together with our partners in Uganda and Tanzania, jointly we have won the right to host AFCON in 2027, and we are very proud of this achievement. We will now mobilize every resource. We will mobilize every person and every sector to make sure that we deliver a world-class football event.
Staying with the hosting of AFCON, Morocco was awarded a hosting right for the 2025 edition, replacing Guinea, which was stripped of the right to host the tournament last year. CAF President Patrice Motsepe explains why Morocco got the 2025 nod.
The facilities, the infrastructure, the commitment of Morocco to football in Morocco and in Africa, but also the enthusiastic support of the government, the support of His Majesty King Mohammed VI has also been very important.
In women's football, there were shock results in the Women African Cup of Nations as Cameroon's indomitable Lionesses, 4-time finalists of the Women's African Cup of Nations, are out of the 2024 tournament in Morocco after being eliminated by Kenya's Harambee Starlets. Cameroon, the 1-0 winner in the first leg, fell twice to Kenya, first in regulation time with Cynthia Sluatso's goal, aided by an error from the Cameroonian goalkeeper Angie Baou, and then losing 4-3 in the fateful penalty shootout. For the first time since 1991, the Indomitable Lionesses will not participate in the final phase of the Women Africa Cup of Nations. Beldine Odemba is the coach of the Harambee Starlets.
I'd like the country, the ministry, to help us organize tournaments for the under categories, the under 20s, the under 17s, the under 18s. If we get such support, and we see more girls and we see more growth and we support in school and we get good coaches in school, then as a country, we're good to go.
Cote d'Ivoire suffered a similar fate in their match against Tanzania. They will also now be among the nations to play at the tournament after they were also eliminated in the first round of qualifiers following the second leg matches. Away from football news now, where hundreds of players are set to participate in the annual Nigerian National Chess Championship. The 2023 edition of the Nigerian National Chess Championship is scheduled for October the 2nd through to October the 9th, 2023 in Lagos. The championship will feature an elite invitational section where 24 of the best chess players in Nigeria will compete for the Nigerian National Chess Champion and the Nigerian National Women's Chess Champion titles. The winners of these titles will represent Nigeria at the 2024 Africa Individual Chess Championship. And now to golf. The fifth edition of the Uganda Golf Club Ladies Open Championship has been officially launched on the terraces of the UGC in Kampala. The three-day Ladies Open Championship will tee off from the 3rd of October and it will climax on the 5th at the Kitante Golf Course. The tournament has three categories. Silver, which is the main event that will take place for 3 days over 15 holes. This will be followed by the bronze category 2 days later for 36 holes and the subsidiary cluster that will crown the championship on the 7th of October 2023. Uganda Golf Club Ladies Captain Wendy Angudiayo confirmed that over 200 golfers are expected for the championship from Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, Nigeria, Zambia and Sweden in Europe.
We registered many requests from our foreign guests who wanted to play the two tournaments. Our guests from Sweden, Kenya, Tanzania will be able to enjoy, the ladies will be able to enjoy two tournaments. So that is why this is unique. It is exciting. We have already received our lady player from Sweden.
In tennis news, Tunisia's Ons Jabeur will take on world's number 87, Argentina's Nadia Podoroska, in the semifinals of the Ngimbo Open on Friday. Jabeur had qualified for the semifinals of the competition after defeating Russian Vera Zvonareva in three sets of 7-5, 4-6, 6-1. The second edition of the Organization of Military Sport in Africa, Osama Games, will be hosted in Abuja, Nigeria's capital, by the Nigerian military. President of the Organization of Military Sports in Africa, Nigeria's Major General Meikano Abdullahi, said over 2,000 military personnel across Africa and a total number of 42 countries are expected to participate in the event, which is expected to hold from November the 6th to the 15th, 2024 at the Moshood Abiola Stadium, Abuja, and other military sporting facilities in the nation's capital. 27 African country militaries out of the 42 have already indicated their interest to attend the games. Major General Meikano Abdullahi pointed out that the Republic of Niger and Gabon, where the military recently toppled democratically elected governments, may not participate in the games.
For the facilities, we have the national stadium, and if you go through our barracks, you can see we have all the facilities, our swimming pool, our football field, even we are trying to create a hockey field there, and we have our gyms. We are going to have a taekwondo, boxing, rings and some other things. So as per the facilities, we are blessed actually.
And out to cricket, where Cricket South Africa has announced the official commencement of the highly anticipated Cricket South Africa Professional Domestic Women's League. The league is set to redefine the future of women's cricket in South Africa, bringing together the finest domestic talents in the country with the aim to elevate the game to new heights while providing equitable opportunities for women cricketers.
Heading over to the track, Navy Commodore Omatsiye Nisamia is a board member of the Athletics Federation of Nigeria, and he spoke with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye about the 2023 athletic season in Nigeria. He says it's the perfect time to start prepping for all African Games and for the Paris Olympics in 2024.
Well, the athletic season, from my own perspective, has been up and down. It is, in some areas we had the good, in some areas we had the challenging times, but be that as it may, it still ended on the high because we were able to still have our athletes win the Diamond League back to back to back, We have athletes also doing well in not just the hurdles, but the long jump, and I'm talking about Toby Amusom and Essie Brume. They've been consistently good athletes that have represented us well and have consistently performed. The season had not been too good because for Essie Brume, there was an injury that slowed her down. And of course, for Toby Amusom, the unfortunate saga with AIU, which I believe would end very well, irrespective of the fact that the AIU has decided to appeal. But I don't see anything coming out of that, because I see the athlete as clean. She's made her mistakes. She's paid for it. And she's also recovered from it. So by and large, the athletic season today in Nigeria, though ended, has come up with different talking points that administrators will now look at and see how we can improve over this in the coming season.
Two major international events, African Games and Olympic Games, will take place next year. When will the Athletics Federation of Nigeria commence preparations for these events?
With regards to preparations for the All African Games and the Olympic Games next year, the time for active preparation starts now. There's no federation and the country that wants to do well in these two events or two competitions that should go to sleep at this time. This is the time to look at the records, gather the athletes that are participating, arrange camping for them, whether local or foreign, and keep them together so that they can focus. Anything beyond or less than this will spell doom. I've always said this, the season is known and our preparations must be touched, funding or no funding. When businessmen want to do a business, even if they don't have the money, they're expecting money, they go ahead and borrow money. So if we know that we mean business, then the federal government and the sports ministry should find a way to raise funds, whether privately funded or borrow, to make sure that we have good preparation, knowing fully well that the monies will come at the end. So this idea of no money is like also having an idea of no proper planning, because without an effective means of identifying source of funding is not a good plan. So I believe that what needs to be done at this stage is to get all the sports federations that are competing in these two games to put a plan and see how that fits into the strategic plan of the ministry. When you put all this together, we'll be able to come up with a roadmap that should make us achieve something meaningful from these two events.
Toby Amusom and Essie Brume ended the season on a high note. Do you think this will spur other athletes to greater performance?
Toby Amusom and Essie Brume, they will continue to remain on our lips. These two ladies have done well since the time we discovered them at the under 18 level till today. I'm proud of them and I'm happy that they have braved the odds, weathered through different stormy situations and are still leaving us on the high note as the season ended. Their performances are very inspiring, and I believe truly that young ones that are looking up to them will be more inspired to believe in themselves, to know that discipline, dedication can take them to whatever zenith they have planned for themselves. These athletes were nothing when they started. Today, their names are the lips of everyone. They have been recognized nationally by giving them awards. And so these performances and rewards that they've gotten, one way or the other, should actually spur the young ones to desire to do something with their God-given talent. It also encourages parents and guardians of young ones to see these ones as mentors, to look at them as people that they can you know, point their words towards to gain some insights into the need for performance, the need for concentration in whatever they are doing. Good thing the two athletes are both educated as well as gifted in the area of sports. So education and sports should move common in hand, and parents should encourage their children to do both, not one leave the other.
That was the Athletics Federation of Nigeria's board member, Navy Commodore Omatsie Nisiyama. He spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the phone from Lagos, Nigeria. Climbing into the boxing ring in an unlikely exhibition bout, the lineal and WBC champ Tyson Fury will fight former UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou on October 28th in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. The Cameroonian mixed martial arts star has left the UFC and is now with the PFL. That was a huge blow for the UFC and has made some stars question whether they should make the jump and have more freedom, as Francis says he has now. As for this exhibition fight, Francis has called on Iron Mike Tyson to be his lead trainer, and he says he is excited about the whole process.
I'm very excited. And when I say this like this, that means it's becoming true.
Mike Tyson was asked about his thoughts about Francis during his training camp. Here's what he had to say.
He's very dedicated. He put forth the effort. And I think people are going to be pretty much more surprised than they anticipated.
The last time a big-time boxer fought an MMA star, it was Floyd Mayweather's battle against Conor McGregor. Mayweather's win in the fight wasn't as exciting as fans had hoped for, but this should be different since it's two heavyweights. October 28th, we will all be tuned in. Lastly, making our way to the football pitch, my colleague Kali Abdu and I discussed the UEFA Champions League games last week and the ones coming up, as well as the teams to watch in the English Premiership. Let's take a listen. Let's talk about last week's Champions League matches. Any teams that stood out to you in their play?
Yeah, I mean, you have the Bayern Munich Manchester United game that produced 7 goals. Bayern controlled the game throughout, but Manchester United came very close to tying the game, putting in 3 goals very late in the game. So that was a very interesting game. Of course, Arsenal, you know, pumping 4 goals against PSV. And, you know, the usual suspects like Manchester City doing the business. PSG beat Dortmund, which was impressive because that group is, you know, more than likely the group of death. But then, you know, Real Madrid kind of struggled a little bit. And Inter Milan, who were in the final last year, also struggled against Sociedad. So those are the games that stood out for me. Also, Napoli are kind of struggling in their league.
So sometimes just because you see a certain team and you're expecting a certain play from them doesn't necessarily mean that it'll happen. As you mentioned, Real struggled, yeah, you know, yeah, still managed to pull it off with Jude's goal late.
Right.
But I want to talk about PSG. This is a team that had Messi, World Cup winner Messi, Neymar, you know, one of the brightest stars in football, alongside Kylian Mbappe, arguably one of the best players in the world right now. They couldn't get it right with those three men in that team. And all of a sudden now, having lost Messi and Neymar, does it seem like this team is finally coming to their own? They had a great pickup in Dembele, who Barcelona fans would argue was not great for them. Seems like he's working for PSG. What are your thoughts on this team now?
Yeah, first of all, PSG, I would say credit to them for getting Luis Enrique, because they're playing some good football right now. I mean, if you look at the stats, they had 69% possession on Dortmund. 69% to 31. So, and Dortmund aren't a poor team by any stretch. So it means that something is working. I mean, they were able to keep Kylian Mbappe, you know, get him on side. He scored a goal in that game. And, you know, like you say, Dembele is doing well. The manager has shouted him out recently, just said people should, you know, lay off him a little bit, you know, trying to ease the pressure off of him, just to allow him to do his thing. He says he's a magical player. So, you know, I guess the best is yet to come from him. I would say one of the things I'm impressed with is the fact that, like you say, they've lost these huge stars. And you would think with the issues with Mbappe, that might affect them, but it doesn't seem to be affecting them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have liked the play from Ashraf Hakimi as well, mm-hmm. having scored in that game. Mm-hmm. And I believe he also scored a free kick this weekend as well. So he's coming into form, being a defender, but he really plays all the way up. Very interesting player, as mm-hmm. we all know, Moroccan star, really came into fruition during the World Cup. So if we're going to keep with the Champions League talk, Manchester United, right? Yeah. Manchester United is having a very interesting year.
Yeah.
In the English Premiership,
right,
and the Champions League as well. They're just trying to figure it out. You know, this is one of the most beloved teams, football teams, right, in the world, with a huge fan base. You mm-hmm. know, what are your thoughts on what's happening with them as an organization?
It's very strange. I mean, since Sir Alex Ferguson left, they've struggled in different ways, and I think that ultimately, you have to question, you know, the management upstairs, outside of the pitch. You know, you think about the caliber of managers they brought through. They brought to Louis van Gaal. They brought to Mourinho. They brought through Moyes. All three of these managers have won something, either with Man U or when they left Man U. So they're not bad managers at all.
Right.
And, you know, now you have Ten Hag. They had Solskjaer. You know, and now you have, they had Ralph from Germany, and then now you have Ten Hag. That's almost seven managers since Ferguson left. So, you know, you wonder, are they struggling on the pitch, or are they struggling because of some of the issues that they have at admin level? Their transfers are very questionable. They've been questionable since Sir Alex Ferguson left. And as you can see with Sancho, you have a very good player, Sancho, and there's issues. He's not playing. They have the Brazilian Anthony issues. The point is it seems to me like Manchester United has enough players to be able to do something. Rashford, Sancho, very talented attacking players. And now the new striker, Holland, it's not bad. You know, you have experienced players like Casemiro, you have Eriksen, but it's just not, it doesn't seem to be working, to the point where you start having fans question a manager of Ten Hag's caliber and wondering, is he good enough for them?
I think these are all valid questions. You could make the argument that team like Chelsea's having relatively the same struggles, if not worse, actually. Kind of staying on the same topic, the thoughts on all of these different trophies and these different cups that they play, right, on a yearly basis. When you're an EPL team, you're playing FA, Caribou Cup, Champs League for those that are playing Champs, Europa for those that are playing Europa. What are your thoughts on the level of exhaustion that this does to teams?
So the depth of your squad is very important, right? So City can afford to go for every tournament because their B and C teams are on par with an A team from another team in the Premier League. So it's like, you know, they have those God-level players just across the spectrum in their team. Whereas a team like West Ham, last season playing in the Europa Conference League, you know, went all the way to win it, they had to really manage their squad like that because they couldn't play a Premier League game with their A squad and then go, you know, next week and play in Europe with the same squad. They had to really juggle. So credit to Moyes for figuring it out. But you have a team like Brighton right now. You have a team like Newcastle, Aston Villa. These teams are in Europe. And Aston Villa has a manager who is European royalty. He knows how to win these European tournaments, Unai Emery. However, it doesn't matter how good he is if he doesn't have that squad depth and the injuries start to pile on. Because remember, injuries start to happen when you're playing too many games. Your muscles aren't really getting that rest and recovery, and you're just aggravating, and then injuries start to happen. So, you know, hopefully they have enough of a squad to manage it, you know. Brighton, Newcastle, Aston Villa. So we'll see what happens with them.
No, that's a very good point. As it pertains to injuries, my team, as you all know, Arsenal, has had some devastating injuries already early on in the season. But because of the depth that we have, we're able to kind of stay afloat. If this were last season, I think we would be in very big trouble. But it's still scary that it's this early on and we're still having injury issues. Mm. Martinelli. Mm. Rice, Trossard is out. Mm. Partey is out. Mm. Like it's bad.
Yeah. Speaking of injuries, I was reading some analysis. Somebody was pointing out. I think it might have been Peter Schmeichel after the Man U Bayern game last week. He was analyzing the level of injuries just across the leagues.
Right.
And he was baffled by it. He says he doesn't understand why there's so many injuries across the board, different leagues.
Yeah.
And he was curious if the World Cup is still, if there's still an effect from the Qatar World Cup.
For the World Cup. It definitely is a possibility, but I also think that, to me, it's so many different things, man. The level that individuals are expected to play at, the games being relatively close back-to-backs, like, I've never seen a time like this where there's been this many injuries.
To your point, I wanted to know, even for myself, I was thinking about this. I know that going to the gym is part and parcel of today's game, mm-hmm. whereas in the 90s it wasn't that huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about players like Messi, who doesn't spend that much time in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And then I contrast him with somebody like Renato Sanchez, who plays right now for AS Roma. He played for Bayern Munich, played for Swansea, played for PSG, and in all those clubs, he literally plays one game
and he's hurt.
Injured.
Right.
And somebody was analyzing it, and they said it's because he grew up going to the gym. At a very young age, he was building too much muscle, and now the muscles are so stiff that any little run, he stretches it, it breaks. He stretches, it breaks. Mm. It's not very elastic because when he was young, they made the wrong move, like send him to the gym to bulk up, and that's affecting him now. So I wonder if, you know, you think about the Spanish game, the classic Spanish game with Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, Messi.
Not athletic.
These guys
they're not athletic.
Players.
Yeah, they're not really athletic guys. And honestly speaking, I think the players that are naturally built, naturally strong, that never really lifted, you got a guy like the original Ronaldo,
R9,
which is naturally strong, but he really wasn't in the gym like that. And then you have players now that, because of the fact that you see a guy like Kyle Walker, you can tell 100% that's gym made.
Mm.
It's not natural.
Mm.
I mean, not to say that there's anything wrong with going to the gym, but it's like if Kyle Walker was not in the gym and not training and just running and playing football, he would not be the specimen that he is today.
Mm.
And it's from the hard work that he's put into, which is very respectable. But that's where the game is today, where in order to compete, you have to constantly be doing plyometrics, working on your muscle mass, working on your speed, your explosiveness from the gym perspective, as much as you're doing skills training as well. Whereas before it was just
all about the skills training,
going to pitch. Man City is at the top. Which one of these teams do you think has the actual potential to dethrone them?
I think still Arsenal is right there because Arsenal have improved from last year. So if they were second, you have to keep them there.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on that. And then you have Liverpool, who have improved as well, and they haven't lost a game. I'm just going to go standings. And then you have Tottenham, who look fearless. They've tied one game and won everything else. And, of course, you know, Brighton are punching above their weight, you know, based on history. But they're playing really well, and they're making a name for themselves. And Newcastle, Man United, these are teams. Newcastle, you know, was in the top four last season, so we have to mention them, even though they're not doing well. And Man U is Man U. And then lastly, Chelsea. You know, Chelsea are not doing well at all. But, you know, you look at it as a marathon and say maybe
they'll even it out
and these guys will come back at some point.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
So I would say Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham are the teams that I think can give City a run for their money.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Kali. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap for the September 29th edition of the show. Hope you all have a great weekend. I'm Mukbil Yabro in Washington, in for Sonny Young. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.